faceplate up, his face pained. Kaladin? I had to make the choice that would let me sleep at night, Moash, Kaladin said wearily, standing before the unconscious form of the king. Blood pooled around Kaladin's boot from the wounds he'd reopened. Lightheaded, he had to lean on his spear to keep on his feet.
You said he was trustworthy,
Graves said, turning toward Moash, his voice ringing inside his shardplate helm.
You promised me, Moash! Kaladin is trustworthy, Moash said.
It was just the three of them. Four, if you counted the king, standing in a lonely hallway of the palace. This would be a sad place to die, a place away from the wind.
He's just a little confused, Moash said, stepping forward. This will still work. You didn't tell anyone, right, Cal?
I recognize this hallway, Kaladin realized. It's the very place we fought the assassin in white. To his left, windows lined the wall, though shutters kept out the light rainfall. Yes, there. He spotted where planks had been installed over the hole that the assassin had cut through the wall, the place where Kaladin had fallen into blackness. Back here again. He took a deep breath and steadied himself as best he could on his good leg, then raised the spear, point toward Moash. Storms his leg hurt.
Cal, the king is obviously wounded, Moash said. We followed your trail of blood here. He's practically dead already.
Trail of blood. Kaladin blinked bleary eyes. Of course. His thoughts were coming slowly. He should have caught that. Moash stopped a few feet from Kaladin, just out of easy striking range with the spear.
What are you going to do, Cal?
Moash demanded, looking at the spear pointed toward him.
Would you really attack a member of Bridge Four?
You left Bridge Four the moment you turned against our duty, Kaladin whispered.
And you're different?
No, I'm not, Kaladin said, feeling a hollowness in his stomach. But I'm trying to change that. Moash took another step forward, but Kaladin pushed the spear point upward toward Moash's face. His friend hesitated, raising his gauntleted hands in a warding gesture. Graves moved forward, but Moash shooed him away, then turned to Kaladin.
What do you think this will accomplish, Cal? If you get in our way, you'll just get yourself killed, and the king will still be dead. You want me to know you don't agree with this? Fine. You tried. Now you're overmatched, and there is no point in fighting. Put down the spear.
Kaladin glanced over his shoulder. The king was still breathing. Moash's armor clinked. Kaladin turned back, raising the spear again. Storms, his head was really throbbing now.
I mean it, Cal, Moash said.
You'd attack me, Kaladin said.
Your captain? Your friend?
Don't turn this around on me.
Why not?
Which is more important to you, me or petty vengeance?
He murdered them, Kaladin, Moash snapped. That sorry excuse for a king killed the only family I ever had.
I know.
Then why are you protecting him?
It wasn't his fault.
That's a load of... It wasn't his fault,
Kaladin said.
But I'd be here even if it had been, Moash. We have to be better than this, you and I. It's... I can't explain it. Not perfectly. You have to trust me. Back down. The king hasn't yet seen you or Graves. We'll go to Dalinar, and I'll see that you get justice against the right man. Rashon, the one truly behind your grandparents' deaths. But Moash, we're not going to be this kind of men. Murders in dark corridors, killing a drunk man because we find him distasteful, telling ourselves it's for the good of the kingdom. If I kill a man, I'm going to do it in the sunlight, and I'm going to do it only because there is no other way.
Moash hesitated. Graves clinked up beside him, but again Moash raised a hand, stopping him. Moash met Kaladin's eyes, then shook his head.
Sorry, Cal. It's too late. You won't have him. I won't back down. I guess I wouldn't want you to.
Moash slammed his faceplate down, the sides misting as it sealed. 84. The One Who Saves.
1-1-1-8-2-5-1-0-1-1-1-2-7-1-2-4-9-1-5-1-2-1-0-1-1-4-1-0-2-1-5-1-1-7-1-5-1-4-2-5-4-1-4-3-4-1-0-9-1-6-1-4-9-1-4-9-3-4-1-2-1-2-2-5-4-1-0-1-0-1-2-5 1-2-7-1-0-1-5-1-9-1-0-1-1-1-2-3-4-1-2-5-5-1-1-5-2-5-1-1-5-2-5-1-2-1-5-7-5-5-1-1-1-2-3-4-1-0-1-1-1-2-9-1-5-1
From the diagram, book of the second sealing rotation, pattern 15.
The stone block slid inward, confirming Shallan's deduction. They had opened a building that hadn't been entered or even seen for centuries. Renarin stepped back from the hole he'd made, giving Shallan a chance to step forward. The air from inside smelled stale, musty. Renarin dismissed his blade, and, oddly as he did so, he let out a relieved sigh and relaxed against the outer wall of the building. Shallan moved to enter, but the bridgeman slipped in front of her to check the building's safety first, raising sapphire lanterns. The light revealed majesty. Shallan's breath caught in her throat. The large circular room was a space worthy of a palace or temple. A mosaic mural covered the wall and floor with majestic images and dazzling color. Knights in armor stood before swirling skies of red and blue. People from all walks of life were depicted in all manner of settings, each crafted from vivid colors of every kind of stone, a masterwork that brought the whole world into one room. Worried she'd damaged the portal somehow, she'd placed Renarin's cuts near a ripple that she had hoped indicated a doorway, and it seemed that she'd been correct. She entered through the hole and walked a curving path through the circular chamber, silently counting the divisions in the floor mural. There were 10 main ones, just as there had been 10 orders of knights, 10 kingdoms, 10 peoples. And then, between the segments representing the first and 10th kingdoms, was a narrower 11th section. It depicted a tall tower, Urethiru. She'd found it, the portal. And this artwork, such beauty! It was breathtaking. No, there wasn't time to admire art right now. The large floor mosaic swirled around the center, but the swords of each knight pointed toward the same area of the wall, so Shallan walked in that direction. Everything in here seemed perfectly preserved, even the lamps on the walls, which appeared to still hold dun gemstones. On the wall she found a metal disc set into the stone. Was this steel? It hadn't rusted or even tarnished, despite its long abandonment. "It's coming," Renarin announced from the other side of the room, his quiet voice echoing across the domed chamber. Storms that boy was disturbing, particularly when accompanied by a howling storm and the sound of rain pelting the plateau outside. Brightness, Inadara, and several scholars arrived. Stepping into the chamber, they gasped, and then began talking over one another as they rushed to examine the mural. Shallan studied the strange disc set into the wall. It was shaped like a 10-pointed star and had a thin slot directly in the center. The Radiance could operate this place, she thought. And what did the Radiance have that nobody else did? Many things. But the shape of that slot in the metal gave her a pretty good guess why only they could make the Oath Gate work. Renarin, get over here, Shallan said. The boy clomped in her direction. Shallan, Pattern said warningly. Time is very short. They have summoned the Everstorm, and there's something else coming from the other direction. A high storm? It's the Weeping, Shallan said, looking to Pattern, who dimpled the wall just beside the steel disc. No high storms. One is coming anyway. Shallan, they're going to hit together. Two storms coming, one from each direction. They will crash into each other right here. I don't suppose they'll just, you know, cancel each other out. They will feed each other, Pattern said. It will be like two waves hitting with their peaks coinciding. It will create a storm like none the world has ever seen. Stone will shatter. Plateaus themselves might collapse. It's going to be bad. Very, very bad. Shallan looked to Inadara, who had walked up beside her. Thoughts? I don't know what to think, Brightness, Inadara said. You were right about this place. I no longer trust myself to judge what is correct and what is false. We need to move the armies to this plateau, Shallan said. Even if they defeat the Parshendi, they're doomed unless we can make this portal work. It doesn't look like a portal at all, Inadara said. What will it do? Open a doorway in the wall? I don't know, Shallan said, looking to Renarin. Summon your shard blade. He did so, wincing as it appeared. Shallan pointed at the slot like a keyhole in the wall, acting on a hunch. See if you can scratch that metal with your blade. Be very careful. We don't want to ruin the Oath Gate in case I'm wrong. Renarin stepped up and carefully, using his hand to pinch the weapon from above, placed the tip of the blade on the metal around the keyhole. He grunted as the blade wouldn't cut. He tried a little harder, and the metal resisted the blade. Made of the same stuff, Shallan said, growing excited. And that slot is shaped like it might fit a blade. Try sliding the weapon in very slowly. He did so, and as the point moved into the hole, the entire shape of the keyhole shifted, the metal flowing to match the shape of Renarin's shard blade. It was working. He got the weapon placed, and they turned around, looking over the chamber. Nothing appeared to have changed. Did that do anything? Renarin asked. It has to have, Shallan said. They'd unlocked a door, perhaps. But how to turn the equivalent of the doorknob? We need High Lady Navani to help, Shallan said. More importantly, we need to bring everyone here. Go, soldiers, bridgemen. Run and tell Dalinar to gather his armies on this plateau. Tell him that if he doesn't, they are doomed. The rest of you scholars, we're going to put our heads together and figure out how this storming thing works.
Adolin danced through the storm, trading blows with Eshenai. She was good, though she didn't use stances he recognized. She dodged back and forth, feeling him out with her blade, bursting through the storm like a crackling thunderbolt. Adolin kept after her, sweeping with his shard blade, forcing her away. A duel. He could win a duel. Even in the middle of a storm, even against a monster, this was something he could do. He backed her away across the battlefield, closer to where his armies had crossed the chasm to join this battle. She was difficult to maneuver. He had only met this Eshenai twice, but he felt he knew her through the way she fought. He sensed her eagerness for blood, her eagerness to kill, the thrill. He did not feel it himself. He sensed it in her. Around him, Parshendi fled or fought in pockets as his men harried them. He passed a Parshendi forced to the ground by soldiers, being gutted in the rain as he tried to crawl away. Water and blood splashed on the plateau, frantic yells sounding amid the thunder. Thunder. Distant thunder. From the west. Adolin glanced in that direction and nearly lost his concentration. He could see it building. Wind and rain spinning in a gigantic pillar, flashing red. Eshu and I swung for him, and Adolin turned back, blocking the blow with his forearm. That section of his plate was getting weak, the cracks leaking stormlight. He stepped into the blow and swung his own blade one-handed into Eshenai's side. He was rewarded by a grunt. She didn't fold, though. She didn't even step back. She raised her blade and smashed it down against his forearm yet again. The plate there disappeared in a flash of light and molten metal. Storms. Adolin was forced to pull the arm back and release the gauntlet, now too heavy without the connecting plate to help it, letting it drop off his hand. The wind that blew against his exposed skin was startlingly powerful. A little more, Adolin thought, not backing away despite the lost section of plate. He grabbed his shard blade in two hands, one metal, the other flesh, and battered forward with a series of strikes. He transitioned out of wind stance. No sweeping majesty for him. He needed the frantic fury of flame stance, not just for the power, but because of what he needed to convey to Eshenai. Eshenai growled, forced backward. "Your day has ended, destroyer," she said inside her helm. "Today your brutality turns against you. Today extinction turns from us to you." "A little more." Adolin pressed her with a burst of swordplay, then he flagged, presenting her with an opening. She took it immediately, swinging for his helm, which leaked from an earlier blow. Yes, she was fully caught up in the thrill. That lent her energy and strength, but it drove her to recklessness, to ignore her surroundings. Adolin took the hit to the head and stumbled. Eshenai laughed with glee and moved to swing again. Adolin lunged forward and slammed his head and shoulder into her chest. His helm exploded from the force of it, but his gambit succeeded. Eshenai had not noticed how close they were to the chasm. His shove threw her over the plateau's edge. He felt Eshenai's panic, heard her shout as she was dropped into the open blackness. Unfortunately, the exploding helm left Adolin momentarily blinded. He stumbled, and when he put a foot down, it landed only on empty air. He lurched, then fell toward the void of the chasm. For a timeless moment, all he felt was panic and fright, a frozen eternity, before he realized he wasn't falling. His vision cleared, and he looked down into the maw before him, rain falling in curtains all around. Then he looked back over his shoulder, to where two bridgemen had grabbed hold of the steel link skirt of his plate and were struggling to hold him back from the brink. Grunting, they clung to the slick metal, holding tight with feet thrust against stones to keep from being pulled off with him. Other soldiers materialized, rushing to help. Hands grabbed Adolin around the waist and shoulders, and together they hauled him back from the brink of the void, to the point that he was able to get his balance again and stumble away from the chasm. Soldiers cheered, and Adolin let out an exhausted laugh. He turned to the bridgeman, Scar and Drahi. "I guess," Adolin said, "I don't need to wonder if you two can keep up with me or not."
"That was nothing," Scar said.
"Yeah," Drahi added. "Lifting fat light eyes is easy. You should try a bridge sometime."
Adolin grinned, then wiped water from his face with his exposed hand.
"See if you can find a chunk of my helm or forearm piece. Regrowing the armor will go faster if we've got a seed. Collect my gauntlet, too, if you would."
The two nodded. That red lightning in the sky was building, and that spinning column of dark rain was expanding, growing outward. That did not seem like a good sign. He needed a better grasp on what was happening in the rest of the army. He jogged across the bridge to the central plateau. Where was his father? What was happening on Aladar's and Rohian's fronts? Had Shallan returned from her expedition? Everything seemed chaotic here on the central plateau. The rising winds tore at tents, and some of them had collapsed. People ran this way and that. Adolin spotted a figure in a thick cloak, striding purposefully through the rain. That person looked like he knew what he was doing. Adolin caught his arm as he passed.
"Where's my father?" he asked. "What orders are you delivering?"
The hood of the cloak fell down, and the man turned to regard Adolin with eyes that were slightly too large, too rounded. A bald head. Filmy loose clothing beneath the cloak. The assassin in white. Moash stepped forward but did not summon his shard blade. Kaladin struck with his spear, but it was futile. He'd used what strength he had merely to remain upright. His spear glanced off Moash's helm, and the former bridgeman slapped a fist down on the weapon, shattering the wood. Kaladin lurched to a stop, but Moash wasn't done. He stepped forward and slammed an armored fist into Kaladin's gut. Kaladin gasped, folding as things broke inside of him. Ribs snapped like twigs before that impossibly strong fist. Kaladin coughed, spraying blood across Moash's armor, then groaned as his friend stepped back, removing his fist. Kaladin collapsed to the cold stone floor, everything shaking. His eyes felt like they'd pop from his face, and he curled around his broken chest, trembling. "Storms," Moash's voice was distant. "That was a harder blow than I intended."
"You did what you had to, Graves."
"Oh, Stormfather. The pain."
"Now what, Moash?"
"We end this. Kill the king with a shard blade. It will still look like the assassin, hopefully. Those blood trails are frustrating. They might make people ask questions. Here, let me cut down these boards so it looks like he came in through the wall like last time."
Cold air. Rain. Yelling? Very distant? He knew that voice.
"Syl?"
Kaladin whispered, blood on his lips.
"Syl?"
Nothing.
"I ran until I couldn't any longer,"
Kaladin whispered.
"End of race.
Life before death."
"I will do it, Graves. I will bear this burden."
"It is my right," Moash said.
He blinked, eyes resting on the king's unconscious body just beside him, still breathing.
"I will protect those who cannot protect themselves."
It made sense now, why he'd had to make this choice. Kaladin rolled to his knees. Graves and Moash were arguing.
"I have to protect him,"
Kaladin whispered. "Why?"
"If I protect,"
he coughed.
"If I protect only the people I like, it means that I don't care about doing what is right."
If he did that, he only cared about what was convenient for himself. That wasn't protecting. That was selfishness. Straining, agonized, Kaladin raised one foot, the good foot. Coughing blood, he shoved himself upward and stumbled to his feet between Elokar and the assassins. Fingers trembling, he felt at his belt and, after two tries, got his side knife out. He squeezed out tears of pain and through blurry vision saw the two shardbearers looking at him. Moash slowly raised his faceplate, revealing a stunned expression.
"Stormfather! Kel! How are you standing?"
It made sense now. That was why he'd come back. It was about Tien, it was about Dalinar, and it was about what was right. But most of all, it was about protecting people. This was the man he wanted to be. Kaladin moved one foot back, touching his heel to the king, forming a battle stance. Then raised his hand before him, knife out. His hand shook like a roof rattling from thunder. He met Moash's eyes. Strength before weakness.
"You will not have him."
"Finish this, Moash," Graves said. "Storms," Moash said. "There's no need. Look at him. He can't fight back."
Kaladin felt exhausted. At least he'd stood up. It was the end. The journey had come and gone. Shouting. Kaladin heard it now as if it were closer.
"He is mine," a feminine voice said. "I claim him."
"He betrayed his oath."
"He has seen too much," Graves said to Moash. If he lives this day, he'll betray us. You know my words are true, Moash. Kill him.
The knife slipped from Kaladin's fingers, clanging to the ground. He was too weak to hold it. His arm flopped back to his side, and he stared down at the knife, dazed.
I don't care.
He will kill you.
I'm sorry, Cal, Moash said, stepping forward. I should have made it quick at the start.
The words, Kaladin.
That was Syl's voice.
You have to speak the words.
I forbid this.
Your will matters not, Syl shouted. You cannot hold me back if he speaks the words. The words, Kaladin. Say them.
I will protect even those I hate,
Kaladin whispered through bloody lips.
So long as it is right.
A shard blade appeared in Moash's hands. A distant rumbling. Thunder.
The words are accepted,
the Stormfather said reluctantly.
Kaladin!
Syl's voice.
Stretch forth thy hand!
She zipped around him, suddenly visible as a ribbon of light.
I can't,
Kaladin said, drained.
Stretch forth thy hand!
He reached out a trembling hand. Moash hesitated. Wind blew in the opening in the wall, and Syl's ribbon of light became mist, a form she often took. Silver mist, which grew larger, coalesced before Kaladin, extending into his hand. Glowing, brilliant, a shard blade emerged from the mist, vivid blue light shining from swirling patterns along its length. Kaladin gasped a deep breath as if coming fully awake for the first time. The entire hallway went black as the stormlight in every lamp down the length of the hall winked out. For a moment, they stood in darkness. Then Kaladin exploded with light. It erupted from his body, making him shine like a blazing white sun in the darkness. Moash backed away, face pale in the white brilliance, throwing up a hand to shade his eyes. Pain evaporated like mist on a hot day. Kaladin's grip firmed upon the glowing shard blade, a weapon beside which those of Graves and Moash looked dull. One after another, shutters burst open, and down the hallway, wind screaming into the corridor. Behind Kaladin, frost crystallized on the ground, growing backward away from him. A glyph formed in the frost, almost in the shape of wings. Graves screamed, falling in his haste to get away. Moash backed up, staring at Kaladin.
The night's radiant, Kaladin said softly, have returned.
Too late,
Graves shouted. Kaladin frowned, then glanced at the king.
The diagram spoke of this,
Graves said, scuttling back along the corridor.
We missed it. We missed it completely. We focused on making certain you were separated from Dalinar, and not on what our actions might push you to become.
Moash looked from Graves back at Kaladin. Then he ran, plate clinking as he turned and dashed down the corridor and disappeared.
Kaladin,
Syl's voice spoke in his head.
Something is still very wrong. I feel it on the winds.
Graves laughed like a madman.
Separating me, Kaladin whispered. From Dalinar? Why would they care?
He turned, looking eastward.
Oh, no.
85. Swallowed by the sky.
But who is the wanderer, the wild piece, the one who makes no sense? I glimpse at his implications and the world opens to me. I shy back. Impossible. Is it?
From the diagram, West Wall Psalm of Wonders, paragraph 8. Note by Adratagia, could this refer to Marais?
She didn't say if she could even open the pathway?
Dalinar asked as he stalked toward the command tent. Rain pummeled the ground around him, so dense that it was no longer possible to distinguish separate wind-blown sheets in the glare of Navani's fabrial floodlights. It was long past when he should have found cover.
No, Bright Lord,
said Pete the Bridgeman.
But she was insistent that we couldn't face what was coming at us. Two high storms.
How could there be two?
Navani asked. She wore a stout cloak, but was soaked clear through anyway, her umbrella having blown away long ago. Rowian walked on Dalinar's other side, his beard and mustache limp with water.
I don't know, Brightness, Pete said. Well, that's what she said. A high storm and something else. She called it an ever-storm. She expects they're going to collide right here.
Dalinar considered, frowning. The command tent was just ahead. Inside, he'd talked to his field commanders and... The command tent shuddered, then ripped free in a burst of wind. Trailing ropes and spikes, it blew right past Dalinar, almost close enough to touch. Dalinar cursed as the light of a dozen lanterns, once contained in the tent, spilled onto the plateau. Scribes and soldiers scrambled, trying to grab maps and sheets of paper as rain and wind claimed them.
"Storm it," Dalinar said, turning his back to the powerful wind. "I need an update."
"Sir!"
Commander Kale, head of the field command, jogged over, his wife Apara following. Kale's clothing was mostly dry, though that was quickly changing.
"Eladar has won his plateau! Apara was just composing you a message."
"Really?
Almighty bless that man. He'd done it."
"Yes, sir,"
Kale said. He had to shout against the wind and rain.
"High Prince Eladar said the singing Parshendi went right down, letting him slaughter them. The rest broke and fled. Even with Roeon's plateau fallen, we've won the day."
"Doesn't feel like it,"
Dalinar shouted back. Just minutes ago, the rainfall had been light. The situation was degrading quickly.
"Send orders immediately to Eladar, my son, and General Kahl. There's a plateau just to the southeast, perfectly round. I want all of our forces to move there to brace for an oncoming storm."
"Yes, sir,"
Kale said with a salute, fist to coat. With the other hand, however, he pointed over Dalinar's shoulder.
"Sir, have you seen that?"
He turned, looking back toward the west. Red light flashed, lightning coursing down in repeated blasts. The sky itself seemed to spasm as something built there, swirling in an enormous storm cell that was rapidly expanding outward.
"Almighty above,"
Navani whispered. Nearby, another tent shook, its stakes coming undone.
"Leave the tents, Kale,"
Dalinar said.
"Get everyone moving. Now! Navani, go to Brightness Shallan. Help her if you can."
The officer leaped away and began shouting orders. Navani went with him, vanishing into the night, and a squad of soldiers chased after her to provide protection.
"And me, Dalinar?"
Rowian asked.
"We'll need you to take command of your men and lead them to safety," Dalinar said. "If such a thing can be found."
That tent nearby shook again. Dalinar frowned. It didn't seem to be moving along with the wind. And was that shouting? Adolin crashed through the tent's fabric and skidded along the stones on his back, his armor leaking light.
"Adolin!"
Dalinar shouted, dashing to his son. The young man was missing several segments of his armor. He looked up with gritted teeth, blood streaming from his nose. He said something, but it was lost to the wind. No helm, no left vambrace, the breastplate cracked just short of shattering, his right leg exposed. Who could have done such a thing to a shard-bearer? Dalinar knew the answer immediately. He cradled Adolin, but looked up past the collapsed tent. It whipped in the storm and tore away as a man strode past it, glowing with spinning trails of stormlight. Those foreign features, clothing all of white plastered to his body by the rain, a bowed hairless head, shadows hiding eyes that glowed with stormlight. Gavilar's murderer. Zeth, the assassin in white.
Shallan worked through the inscriptions on the wall of the round chamber, frantically searching for some way to make the oath gate function. This had to work. It had to. "This is all in the Dawn Chant," Inadara said. "I can't make sense of any of it." "The Knights Radiant are the key. Shouldn't Renarin's sword have been enough?" "What's the pattern?" she whispered. Pattern said. Perhaps you cannot see it because you are too close? Like the shattered planes? Shallan hesitated, then stood and walked to the center of the room, where the depictions of the Knights Radiant and their kingdoms met at a central point. Bright Lord Renarin? Inadara asked. Is something wrong? The young prince had fallen to his knees and was huddled next to the wall. I can see it, Renarin answered feverishly, his voice echoing in the chamber. Ardents, who had been studying part of the murals, looked up at him. I can see the future itself. Why, Almighty? Why have you cursed me so? He screamed a pleading cry, then stood and cracked something against the wall. A rock? Where had he gotten it? He gripped the thing in a gauntleted hand and began to write. Shocked, Shallan took a step toward him. A sequence of numbers? All zeros. It's come, Renarin whispered. It's come, it's come, it's come. We're dead, we're dead, we're dead.
Dalinar knelt beneath a fracturing sky, holding his son. Rainwater washed the blood from Adolin's face, and the boy blinked, dazed from his thrashing.
Father,
Adolin said. The assassin stepped forward quietly, with no apparent urgency. The man seemed to glide through the rain.
When you take the princedom, son, Dalinar said, don't let them corrupt you. Don't play their games. Lead. Don't follow.
Father,
Adolin said, his eyes focusing. Dalinar stood up. Adolin lurched over onto all fours and tried to get to his feet, but the assassin had broken one of Adolin's greaves, which made it almost impossible to rise. The boy slipped back into the pooling water.
You've been taught well, Adolin, Dalinar said, eyes on that assassin. You're a better man than I am. I was always a tyrant who had to learn to be something else. But you've been a good man from the start. Lead them, Adolin. Unite them.
Father!
Dalinar walked away from Adolin. Nearby, scribes and attendants, captains and enlisted men, all shouted and scrambled, trying to find order in the chaos of the storm. They followed Dalinar's order to evacuate, and most had yet to notice the figure in white. The assassin stopped 10 paces from Dalinar. Roian, pale-faced and stammering, backed away from the two of them and began shouting,
Assassin! Assassin!
The rainfall was actually letting up a little. That didn't bring Dalinar much hope. Not with that red lightning on the horizon. Was that a storm wall building at the front of the new storm? His efforts to disrupt the Parshendi had fallen short. The Shin man didn't strike. He stood opposite Dalinar, motionless, expressionless, water dripping down his face. Unnaturally calm. Dalinar was far taller and broader. This small man in white with his pale skin seemed almost a youth, a stripling by comparison. Behind him, Roian's cries were lost in the confusion. However, Bridge Four did run up to surround Dalinar, spears in hand. Dalinar waved them back.
There's nothing you can do here, lads, Dalinar said. Let me face him.
10 heartbeats.
Why?
Dalinar asked the assassin, who still stood there in the rain.
Why kill my brother? Did they explain the reasoning behind your orders?
I am Zeth, son Velano,
the man said, harshly.
Truthless of Shinovar. I do as my masters demand, and I do not ask for explanations.
Dalinar revised his assessment. This man was not calm. He seemed that way, but when he spoke, he did it through clenched teeth, his eyes open too wide.
He's mad, Dalinar thought. Storms. You don't have to do this, Dalinar said. If it's about pay...
What I am owed,
the assassin shouted, rainwater spraying from his face and stormlight rising from his lips.
Will come to me eventually. Every bit of it. I will drown in it, Stonewalker.
Zeth put his hand to the side, Shardblade appearing. Then with a curt, deprecatory motion, like he was merely trimming a bit of gristle from his meat, he strode forward and swung at Dalinar. Dalinar caught the blade with his own, which appeared in his hand as he raised it. The assassin spared a glance for Dalinar's weapon, then smiled, lips drawn thin, showing only a hint of teeth. That eager smile, matched with haunted eyes, was one of the most evil things Dalinar had ever seen.
"Thank you," the assassin said, "for extending my agony by not dying easily."
He stepped back and burst afire with white light. He came at Dalinar again, inhumanly quick. Adolin cursed, shaking out of his daze. Storms his head hurt. He'd smacked at something good when the assassin tossed him to the ground. Father was fighting Zeth. Bless the man for listening to reason and bonding that madman's blade. Adolin gritted his teeth and struggled to get to his feet, something that was difficult with a broken greave. Though the rain was letting up, the sky remained dark. To the west, lightning plunged downward like red waterfalls, almost constant. At the same time, wind gusted from the east. Something was building out there, too, from the origin. This was very bad.
"Those things Father said to me."
Adolin stumbled, almost falling to the ground, but hands appeared to assist him. He glanced to the side to find those two bridgemen from before, Scar and Drahi, helping him to his feet.
"You two," Adolin said, "are getting a storming raise. Help me get this armor off."
He frantically began removing sections of armor. The entire suit was so battered it was nearly useless. Metal clanged nearby as Dalinar fought. If he could hold a little longer, Adolin would be able to help. He would not let that creature get the better of him again. Not again. He spared a glance for what Dalinar was doing and froze, hands on the straps for his breastplate.
His father moved beautifully.
Dalinar did not fight for his life. His life hadn't been his own for years. He fought for Gavilar. He fought as he wished he had all those years ago for the chance he had missed. In that moment between storms, when the rain stilled and the winds drew in their breaths to blow, he danced with the Slayer of Kings and somehow held his own. The assassin moved like a shadow. His steps seemed too quick to be human. When he jumped, he soared into the air. He swung his shard blade like flashes of lightning, and would occasionally stretch forward with his other hand as if to grab Dalinar. Recalling their previous encounter, Dalinar recognized that as the more dangerous of Zeth's weapons. Each time, Dalinar managed to bring his blade around and force the assassin away. The man attacked from different directions, but Dalinar didn't think. Thoughts could get jumbled, the mind disoriented. His instincts knew what to do. Duck when Zeth leaped over Dalinar's head, step backward, avoiding a strike that should have severed his spine, lash out, forcing the assassin away. 3 quick steps backward, sword up wardingly, strike for the assassin's palm as it tried to touch him. It worked. For this brief time, he fought this creature. Bridge 4 remained back as he'd commanded. They'd only have interfered. He survived. But he did not win. Finally, Dalinar twisted away from a strike but was unable to move quickly enough. The assassin rounded on him and thrust a fist into his side. Dalinar's ribs cracked. He grunted, stumbling, almost falling. He swung his blade towards Zeth, warding the man back, but it didn't matter. The damage was done. He sank to his knees, barely able to remain upright for the pain. In that instant, he knew a truth he should have always known.
If I'd been there on that night, awake instead of drunk and asleep, Gavilar would still have died. I couldn't have beaten this creature. I can't do it now, and I couldn't have done it then. I couldn't have saved him.
It brought peace, and Dalinar finally set down that boulder, the one he'd been carrying for over 6 years. The assassin stalked toward him, glowing with terrible stormlight, but a figure lunged for him from behind. Dalinar expected it to be Adolin, perhaps one of the bridgemen. Instead, it was Rowian. Adolin tossed aside the last bit of armor and went running for his father. He wasn't too late. Delinar knelt before the assassin, defeated but not dead. Adolin shouted, drawing close, and an unexpected figure leapt out of the wreckage of a tent. High Prince Rowian, incongruously holding a side sword and leading a small force of soldiers, rushed the assassin. Rats had a better chance fighting a chasm fiend. Adolin barely had time to shout as the assassin, moving at blinding speed, spun and cut the blade from the hilt of Rowian's sword. Zeth's hand shot out and slammed against Rowian's chest. Rowian shot into the air, trailing a wisp of stormlight. He screamed as the sky swallowed him. He lasted longer than his men. The assassin swept between them, deftly avoiding spears, moving with uncanny grace. A dozen soldiers fell in an instant, eyes burning. Adolin jumped over one of the bodies as it collapsed. Storms. He could still hear Rowian screaming up above somewhere. Adolin thrust at the assassin, but the creature twisted and slapped the shard blade away. The assassin was grinning. He didn't speak, though stormlight leaked between his teeth. Adolin tried smoke stance, attacking with a quick sequence of jabs. The assassin silently battered them away, unfazed. Adolin focused, dueling the best he could, but he was a child before this thing. Rowian, still screaming, plummeted from the sky and hit nearby with a sickening wet crunch. A quick glance at his corpse told Adolin that the High Prince would never rise again. Adolin cursed and lunged for the assassin, but a fluttering tarp, brought by the assassin in passing, leaped toward Adolin. The monster could command inanimate objects. Adolin sliced through the tarp and then jumped forward to swing for the assassin. He found nothing to fight. Duck! He threw himself to the ground as something passed over his head, the assassin flying through the air. Zeth's hissing shard blade missed Adolin's head by inches. Adolin rolled and came to his knees, puffing. How? What could he do? You can't beat it, Adolin thought. Nothing can beat it. The assassin landed lightly. Adolin climbed back to his feet and found himself in company. A dozen of the bridgemen formed up around him. Scar at their head, looked to Adolin and nodded. Good men. They'd seen Rowian's fall and still they joined him. Adolin hefted his shard blade and noticed that a short distance away his father had managed to regain his feet. Another small group of bridgemen moved in around him, and he allowed it. He and Adolin had dueled and lost. Their only chance now was a mad rush. Nearby, shouts arose. General Call and a large strike force of soldiers judging by the banner approaching. There wasn't time. The assassin stood on the wet plateau between Delinar's small troop and Adolin's, head bowed. Fallen blue lanterns gave light. The sky had gone as black as night except when broken by that red lightning. Charge and mob a shard-bearer. Hope for a lucky blow. It was the only way. Adolin nodded to Delinar. His father nodded back, grim. He knew. He knew there was no beating this thing. Lead them, Adolin. Unite them. Adolin screamed, charging forward, sword out, men running with him. Delinar advanced too, more slowly, one arm across his chest. Storms, the man could barely walk. Zeth snapped his head up, face devoid of all emotion. As they arrived, he leaped, shooting into the air. Adolin's eyes followed him up. Surely they hadn't chased him off. The assassin twisted in the air, then crashed back down to the ground, glowing like a comet. Adolin barely parried a blow from the blade. The force of it was incredible. It tossed him backward. The assassin spun, and a pair of bridgemen fell with burning eyes. Others lost spearheads as they tried to stab at him. The assassin ripped free from the press of bodies, trailing blood from a couple of wounds. Those wounds closed as Adolin watched, the blood stopping. It was as Kaladin had said. With a horrible sinking feeling, Adolin realized just how little a chance they'd ever had. The assassin dashed for Delinar, who brought up the rear of the attack. The aging soldier raised his blade, as if in respect, then thrust once. An attack. That was the way to go.
Father,
Adolin whispered. The assassin parried the thrust, then placed his hand against Dalinar's chest. The High Prince, suddenly glowing, lurched up into the dark sky. He didn't scream. The plateau fell silent. Some bridgemen propped up wounded fellows. Others turned toward the assassin, pulling into a spear formation, looking frantic. The assassin lowered his blade, then started to walk away.
Bastard!
Adolin spat, dashing after him.
Bastard!
He could barely see for the tears. The assassin stopped, then leveled his weapon toward Adolin. Adolin stumbled to a halt. Storms, his head hurt.
It is finished, the assassin whispered. I am done.
He turned from Adolin and continued to walk away.
Like damnation itself, you are.
Adolin raised his shard blade overhead. The assassin spun and slapped the weapon so hard with his own blade that Adolin distinctly heard something snap in his wrist. His blade tumbled from his fingers, vanishing. The assassin's hand slapped out, knuckles striking Adolin in the chest, and he gasped, his breath suddenly gone from his throat. Stunned, he sank to his knees.
I suppose, the assassin snarled, I can kill one more on my own time.
Then he grinned, a terrible smile, with teeth clenched, eyes wide, as if he were in enormous pain. Gasping, Adolin awaited the blow. He looked toward the sky.
Father, I'm sorry.
I...
What was that? He blinked as he made out something glowing in the air, drifting down like a leaf. A figure. A man. Dalinar. The High Prince fell slowly as if he were no more weighty than a cloud. White light streamed from his body in glowing wisps. Nearby bridgemen murmured, soldiers shouted, pointing. Adolin blinked, certain he was delusional. But no, that was Dalinar. Like one of the heralds themselves, coming down from the Tranquiline halls. The assassin looked, then stumbled back, mouth open in horror.
No! No!
And then, like a falling star, a blazing fireball of light and motion shot down in front of Dalinar. It crashed into the ground, sending out a ring of stormlight like white smoke. At the center, a figure in blue crouched with one hand on the stones, the other clutching a glowing shard blade. His eyes afire with a light that somehow made the assassin's seem dull by comparison, he wore the uniform of a bridgeman and bore the glyphs of slavery on his forehead. The expanding ring of smoky light faded, save for a large glyph, a sword-like shape, which remained for a brief moment before puffing away.
You sent him to the sky to die, assassin, Kaladin said, stormlight puffing from his lips. But the sky and the winds are mine. I claim them, as I now claim your life.
86. Patterns of Light. One is almost certainly a traitor to the others. From the diagram, Book of the Second Desk Drawer, paragraph 27. Kaladin let the stormlight evaporate before him. He was running low. His frantic flight across the plains had drained him. How shocked he had been when the flare of light rising into the darkening sky above a lit plateau had turned out to be Dalinar himself, lashed to the sky by Zeth. Kaladin had caught him quickly and sent him back to the ground with a careful lashing of his own. Ahead, Zeth stumbled away from the princeling, holding out his sword wardingly toward Kaladin, eyes wide and lips trembling. Zeth looked horrified. Good. Dalinar finally landed on the plateau with a soft step, and Kaladin's lashing ran out.
Seek shelter, Kaladin said, the tempest in his veins dampening further. I flew over a storm on my way here, a big one, coming from the west. We're in the process of withdrawing. Hurry, Kaladin said. I will deal with our friend.
Kaladin?
Kaladin turned, glancing at the High Prince, who stood tall despite cradling one arm against his chest. Dalinar met his eyes.
You are what I've been looking for.
Yes, finally. Kaladin turned and strode toward the assassin. He passed Bridge 4 in a tight formation, and the men, at a barked command from Teft, threw something down before Kaladin. Blue lanterns, lit by oversized gems that had lasted the weeping. Bless them. Stormlight streamed up as he passed, filling him. With a sinking feeling, however, he noticed two corpses with burned-out eyes at their feet. Peyton and Mart. Eth clutched his brother's body, weeping. Other bridgemen had lost limbs. Kaladin snarled. No more. He would lose no further men to this monster.
You ready?
He whispered.
Of course, Syl said in his head. I'm not the one we've been waiting on.
Burning with stormlight, enraged and alight, Kaladin launched himself at the assassin and met him blade against blade.
We're dead, Renarin muttered. Someone shut him up, Shallan snapped. Gag him if you have to. She pointedly turned around, ignoring the raving prince. She still stood in the center of the muraled chamber. The pattern. What was the pattern? A circular room. A thing on one side that adapted to fit different shard blades. Depictions of knights on the wall glowing with stormlight pointing at a tower city just as the myths described. 10 lamps on the walls. The lock hung over what she thought was a depiction of Natanatan, the kingdom of the shattered plains. 10 lamps. With gems in them. Latticework of metal enclosing each one. Shallan blinked, a shock running through her. It's a Fabriel.
The assassin hurtled into the air. Captain Kaladin flew upward, chasing him, trailing light.
Status of the retreat,
Dalinar bellowed, crossing the plateau, his ribs smarting like nothing else, his wound from before a little better. Storms. That one had faded as he fought, but now it ached something fierce.
Someone get me information!
Scribes and Ardents appeared from the nearby wreckage of tents. Shouts rose from around the plateau. The wind started to pick up. Their period of reprieve, the short calm, was over. They needed to escape these plateaus. Now! Dalinar reached Adolin and helped the young man to his feet. He looked quite a bit worse for wear, bruised, battered, dizzy. He flexed his right hand and winced in pain, then gingerly let it relax.
Damnation, Adolin said. That bridge boy is really one of them? The Knights Radiant?
Yes.
Oddly, Adolin smiled, seeming satisfied.
Ha! I knew there was something wrong with that man.
Go,
Dalinar said, pushing Adolin along.
We need to get the army to move 2 plateaus over that direction where Shallan waits. Get over there and organize what you can.
He looked westward as the wind whipped up further with bursts of rain.
Time is short.
Adolin shouted for the bridgemen to join him, which they did, helping their wounded, though they were unfortunately forced to leave their dead. Several of them carried Adolin's shardplate as well, which was apparently spent. Dalinar limped eastward across the plateau as fast as he could manage in his condition, searching for...
Yes,
the place where he'd left Gallant. The horse snorted, shaking a wet mane.
Bless you, old friend,
Dalinar said, reaching the Rashadium. Through the thunder and the chaos, the horse had not fled. Dalinar moved much more easily once in the saddle, and eventually found Rohaeon's army pouring southward toward Shallan's plateau in organized ranks. He allowed himself a sigh of relief at their orderly march. The majority of the army had already crossed to the southern plateau, only one away from Shallan's round one.
That was wonderful.
He couldn't remember where Captain Call had been sent, but with Rohaeon himself fallen, Dalinar had assumed he'd left his army in chaos.
Dalinar!
A voice called. He turned to find the utterly incongruous sight of Sabariel and his mistress sitting beneath a canopy, eating dried selafruit off a plate held by an awkward-looking soldier. Sabariel raised a cup of wine toward Dalinar.
"Hope you don't mind," Sabariel said. "We liberated your stores. They were blowing past at the time, headed for certain doom."
Dalinar stared at them. Pallona even had a novel out and was reading.
"You did this?"
Dalinar asked, nodding toward Rohaeon's army.
"They were making a racket," Sabariel said, "wandering around, shouting at one another, weeping and wailing. Very poetic. Figured someone should get them moving. My army is already off on that other plateau. It's getting rather cramped there, you realize."
Pallona flipped the page in her novel, barely paying attention.
"Have you seen Elidar?"
Dalinar said. Sabariel gestured with his wine.
"He should be about finished crossing as well. You'll find him in that direction. Downwind, happily."
"Don't dally," Dalinar said. "You remain here and you're a dead man."
"Like Rohaeon?"
Sabariel asked.
"Unfortunately."
"So it is true,"
Sabariel said, standing up, brushing off his trousers, which were somehow still dry.
"Who am I going to make fun of now?"
He shook his head sadly. Dalinar rode off in the direction indicated. He noticed that, incredibly, a pair of bridgemen were still tailing him, only now catching up to where he'd found Sabariel. They'd saluted as Dalinar noticed them. He told them where he was going, then sped up.
Storms. In terms of pain, riding with broken ribs wasn't much better than walking with them. Worse, actually.
He did find Alidar on the next plateau over, supervising his army as it seeped onto the perfectly round plateau that Shallan had indicated. Rust Ethel was there as well, wearing his plate, one of the suits Adolin had won, and guiding one of Dalinar's large mechanical bridges. It settled down next to two others that spanned the chasm here, crossing in places the smaller bridges wouldn't have been able to. The plateau everyone was crowding onto was relatively small by the scale of the shattered plains, but it was still several hundred yards across. It would fit the armies, hopefully.
"Dalinar?"
Alidar asked, trotting his horse over. Lit by a large diamond, stolen from one of Navani's fabrial lights, it seemed, hanging from his saddle, Alidar sported a soaked uniform and a bandage on his forehead, but appeared otherwise unharmed.
"What in Kalek's tongue is going on out here? I can't get a straight answer from anyone."
"Rohaeon is dead," Dalinar said wearily, reining in gallant. "He fell with honor, attacking the assassin. The assassin, hopefully, has been distracted for a time."
"We won the day," Alidar said. "I scattered those Parshendi. We left well over half of them dead on that plateau, perhaps even three-quarters. Adolin did even better on his plateau, and from reports, the ones on Rohaeon's plateau have fled. The Vengeance Pact is fulfilled. Gavilar is avenged and the war is over."
So proud. Dalinar had difficulty finding the words to deflate him, so he just stared at the other man, feeling numb.
"Can't afford that," Dalinar thought, sagging in his saddle. "Have to lead."
"It doesn't matter, does it?"
Alidar asked more softly.
"That we won." "Of course it matters.
But shouldn't it feel different?"
"Exhaustion," Dalinar said. "Pain. Suffering. This is what victory usually feels like, Alidar. We've won, yes, but now we have to survive with our victory. Your men are almost across."
He nodded.
"Get everyone onto that plateau," Dalinar said. "Force them up against one another if you have to. We need to be ready to move through the portal as quickly as possible once it's opened."
If it opened. Dalinar urged Gallant forward, crossing one of the bridges to the packed ranks on the other side. From there, he forced his way, with difficulty, toward the center, where he hoped to find salvation. Kaladin shot into the air after the assassin. The shattered plains fell away beneath him. Fallen gemstones twinkled across the plateau, abandoned where tents had blown down or soldiers had fallen. They illuminated not only the central plateau, but three others around it and one more beyond, one that looked oddly circular from above. The armies gathered on that one. Small lumps dotted the others like freckles. Corpses. So many. Kaladin looked toward the sky. He was free once again. Winds surged beneath him, seeming to lift him, propel him, carry him. His shard blade shattered into mist and sills zipped out, becoming a ribbon of light that spun around him as he flew. Syl lived. Syl lived. He still felt euphoric about that. Shouldn't she be dead? When he'd asked on their flight out, her response had been simple.
I was only as dead as your oaths, Kaladin.
Kaladin continued upward, out of the path of the oncoming storms. He could see those distinctly from this vantage. Two of them, one rolling from the west and bursting with red lightning, the other approaching more quickly from the east with a dark gray storm wall. They were going to collide. A high storm, Kaladin said, shooting up through the sky after Zeth. The red storm is from the Parshendi, but why is a high storm coming? This isn't the time for one.
My father,
Syl said, voice growing solemn.
He brought the storm, rushing its pace. He's broken, Kaladin. He doesn't think any of this should be happening. He wants to end it all, wash everyone away, and try to hide from the future.
Her father. Did that mean the storm father wanted them dead? Great. The assassin disappeared above, vanishing into the dark clouds. Kaladin gritted his teeth, lashing himself upward again for more acceleration. He shot into the clouds, and all around him became featureless gray. He kept watch for glimmers of light to announce the assassin coming for him. He might not have much warning. The area around him lightened. Was that the assassin? Kaladin extended his hand to the side, and Syl formed into the blade immediately. Not 10 heartbeats? He asked.
Not when I'm here with you ready. The delay is primarily something of the dead. They need to be revived each time.
Kaladin burst out of the clouds and into sunlight. He gasped. He'd forgotten that it was still daytime. Here, far above the earthy darkness of war, the sunlight beat upon the cover of clouds, making them glow with pale beauty. The thin air was frigid, but raging stormlight inside him made that easy to ignore. The assassin hovered nearby, toes pointed downward, head bowed, silvery shard blade held to the side. Kaladin lashed himself so that he stopped, then sank level with the assassin.
I am Zeth's son Valano, the man said. Truthless. Truthless.
He looked up, eyes wide, teeth clenched.
You have stolen honor blades. It is the only explanation.
Storms. Kaladin had always imagined the assassin in white as a calm, cold killer. This was something different. I possess no such weapon, Kaladin said, and I don't know why it would matter if I did.
I hear your lies. I know them.
Zeth shot forward, sword out. Kaladin lashed himself to the side, jerking out of the way. He swiped with his blade, but didn't come close to connecting. I should have practiced more with the sword, he muttered.
Oh, that's right. You probably want me to be a spear, don't you?
The weapon fuzzed to mist, then elongated and grew into the shape of a silvery spear with glowing, swirling glyphs along the sharpened sides of the spearhead. Zeth twisted in the air, lashing himself back into a hovering position. He looked at the spear, then seemed to tremble.
No. Truthless. I am truthless. No questions.
Stormlight streaming from his mouth, Zeth threw his head back and screamed, a futile human sound that dissipated in the infinite expanse of sky. Beneath them, thunder rumbled, and the clouds shivered with color.
Shallan dashed from lamp to lamp in the circular chamber, infusing each one with stormlight. She glowed brightly, having drawn the light from the ardent's lanterns. There wasn't time for explanation. So much for keeping her nature as a surge binder hidden. This room was a giant fabrial, powered by the stormlight of those lamps. She should have seen it. She passed Inadara, who stared at her. How are you doing this, Brightness? Several of the scholars had settled onto the ground, where they hurriedly sketched glyphward prayers onto cloths, using chalk because of the moisture. Shallan didn't know if those prayers were a request for safety from the storms, or from Shallan herself. She did hear the words, "Lost Radiant," murmured by one. Two more lanterns. She infused a ruby with stormlight, bringing it to life, but then ran out of light. "Gemstones," she said, spinning on the room. "I need more stormlight." The people inside looked to one another, all but Renarin, who continued to scratch identical glyphs on the rocks as he wept. Stormfather. She'd bled them all dry. One of the scholars had dug an oil lantern from her pack, and it paled beside the lamps on the walls. Shallan ducked out of the opening in the door, looking at the mass of soldiers who gathered there. Thousands upon thousands shuffled in the darkness. Fortunately, some of them carried lanterns. "I need your stormlight," she said. "Was that Adolin?" Shallan gasped, other thoughts fleeing for the moment as she spotted him in the front of the crowd, leaning on a bridgeman for support. Adolin was a mess, the left side of his face a patchwork of blood and bruises, his uniform ripped and bloodied. Shallan ran to him, pulling him close. "Good to see you too," he said, burying his face in her hair. "I hear you're going to get us out of this mess." "Mess?" she asked. Thunder rumbled and cracked without pause as red lightning blasted down not in streaks but in sheets. Storms! She hadn't realized it was so close. "Mmm," Pattern said. She looked left. A storm wall was approaching. The storms were like two hands, closing in to crush the armies between them. Shallan breathed in sharply and stormlight entered her, bringing her to life. Adolin had a gemstone or two on him, apparently. He pulled back, looking her over. "You too?" he said. She bit her lip. "Yeah, sorry."